Silver just went down 41% in a day. Silver, not Fartcoin.
It's wild, you know, approaching a 50% correction. I don't think that we've topped out for the cycle. I still think that somewhere between the last halving and the next halving, we're going to 340 plus or minus 15%. We are going to get the biggest fucking bull run that you've ever even thought of as soon as this liquidity starts.
Everybody gets Bitcoin at the price they deserve, right?
And no, I mean, no, Brandon. Everybody sells Bitcoin at the price that they deserve. That's the truth.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, one of my favorite recurring guests, British Hoddle, in the house. British, last time you were on, man, you told me we couldn't get to one Bitcoin anymore. It was impossible. Well, now we've crashed to 70,000. So is the answer still the same?
Western brokies can now get to one Bitcoin.
I know. I mean, with this craziness and the market volatility that we're seeing here, especially in the gold and silver markets, how are you looking at everything? I mean, it's been a rocky start, to say the least, of 2026. So, you know, how are you viewing just the overall markets right now?
It's kind of it's interestingly confusing, right? Like, because what's happened is gold and silver were rocketing up. So Bitcoin was acting like a risk on asset. And now gold and silver are going down and Bitcoin's acting like a risk off asset. So it's like, how do you, you know, how do you take this? So the only way that I can take this is to look at it and go, there is accumulation happening. There are weak hands that, you know, as I like to call them, the sissies, that need to be flushed out. And they're being flushed out. I mean, this is a 50%, you know, approaching a 50% correction. It's wild. I didn't expect this to be a 50% correction in the mid curve. I don't think that we've topped out for the cycle, but again, here we are. It's just one of those things you got to deal with. You know, at the end of the day, like, we can all make price predictions, but it depends on what we're going to do with those price predictions, right? Like, so for me, I'm not trading it. I don't know how to be in the market only for the 10 days of the year that Bitcoin makes all of its moves. I don't know how to do that. So I don't trade it. But, you know, I still think that somewhere between the last halving and the next halving, we're going to 340 plus or minus 15%.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bold call, and I like it, man. But, you know, with the short-term volatility that we're seeing right now, you know, why do you think that everybody's kind of, I guess, going into these precious metals market, you know, especially like the silver market, I think is kind of the most interesting, because everybody's saying that there is some sort of like physical shortage there. Do you foresee
what physical shortage when the shit can drop 41% in a day? So this is the problem with doom and gloom boomers, right? Doom and gloom boomers come out with these narratives, and everything's a new narrative. So the first one was paper Bitcoin. Right? Mm-hmm. Paper Bitcoin. Turns out people were just selling. Okay? That's how a market works. Next, they flipped over to gold and silver strategic shortage. Strategic absolute shortage. There's a shortage in the markets. Look at the difference between the spot price and the paper price and the CME and da 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 da. The shit drops 41%. So what happened? All that strategic structural demand just disappeared. 41% of it just disappeared overnight. So clearly, it was just a concentrated trade that was going on. And it's kind of a signal. Metals kind of rally when you're ending a business cycle. And that's what I think is going on here. I think that we are ending a business cycle. The PMI number, ISM number came out higher than 50, highest in 40 months. That, by the way, isn't like a final signal. What that means is that things are not getting shitter anymore. So it's like a turning signal. And as a result of that, the metals, you know, I think are basically cooked at this point. I think gold and silver is done here. And we'll see. I don't know. Like yesterday we were up 10%, now they're down another 15%. So we've got dead cats bouncing all over the place in gold and silver. And Bitcoin's also taking a write down. I, you know, it just is, it's a kind of a strange market. It's not one that I'm trying to sit here and figure out. The Nasdaq's kind of flat. It's down 1% right now, but it was been kind of flat. It's a very, very interesting market here. Certainly MSTR has taken the brunt of Bitcoin's downside vol. If MSTR wasn't there, I think Bitcoin would be down 60, 70% at this point. But it's not, you know, and we'll see whether we bounce from here or not, or whether we're going to go and hit the 200-week moving average, you know, before running up again. I don't know. It's certainly interesting, but now's not the time to get bearish, right? At 120, if you were bearish, getting bearish at 120 was the time to get bearish. You get bearish now, you're just an idiot.
I love it. But you mentioned MSTR. You know, obviously there was a little bit of a rocky path for both MSTR and Bitcoin last year. I mean, the gold bugs finally had their year, right? I mean, in 25 they ended up positive, while Bitcoin and MSTR kind of ended up in the dumps. But you know, how did you view 2025 as like an overall year? Did you view it as a success? Because I mean, I don't know if you saw the clips of Saylor on what Bitcoin did, but I thought it was very interesting his take on, you know, the Bitcoin treasury companies as well as just how Bitcoin performed in 25.
2025 was a narrative hit it out the park year, right? It was a narrative utter win. It was a narrative, you know, just a cracker of a year better of a year, better a year than we could have expected, narrative-wise. Price-wise, shit. Right? Price-wise, it was shit. But at the same time, you know, we didn't get any liquidity in. We had a Trump administration that realized it's got to get a lot of volatile things done. And they wanted to kind of get it done in the first term, I mean, in the first year of this term. And so that's what they pursued. They pursued getting everything done. And that caused volatility in the markets and uncertainty in the markets. And the markets hate uncertainty. You know, one of the reasons why America's capital markets does really well is that historically, whoever wins the presidency, the opposite team wins the House in the midterms. And the reason why that's good is because it causes a logjam. And the logjam provides certainty to market. So, and it's not just me saying that. Like, you can go and look that up yourself. And President Trump knows that. And Secretary Bessent knows that. And everyone in the cabinet knows that. And so the good thing about them knowing that is that there's only one way that they can win, and that is by printing as much money as they can and pumping up the economy and pumping up the stock market. That's it. That is the only way that they can win, because historically, it's supposed to flip to the Democrats. So if they want a chance in hell of winning, they've got to print as much money as they can, and that should be good for Bitcoin this year.
Well, what do you think of the new? Because I mean, obviously, the Trump and essentially has been yelling at Jerome Powell publicly. I mean, you know, calling him too slow, Powell, going at his neck essentially any chance he can get. And now it's Kevin Warsh, who historically was actually kind of hawkish. He was not like one to really, you know, I guess cut interest rates. He was always trying to battle inflation previously before. You know, really just flooding the market with liquidity. But recently he started to side with Trump. How do you think that this is going to affect the markets? Because it seems like once, you know, he was named as the next Fed Treasury Secretary, the whole market just tanked on that news. So how did you read that the market's reaction, and what do you think is going to happen with the new Fed chair?
Yeah, he's certainly Warsh's, you know, it's funny, I put a tweet out after the last Fed conference. And I was like, if I was President Trump, I would be announcing a replacement to this guy now, because he just in his press conference became too much of a narrative liability. And the next day I was like, okay, I'm going to make a video on this because I think this is quite important. And by the time I woke up, there was an announcement from the Trump administration saying, yeah, we're announcing someone new. And that's because the narrative was important enough. The Trump presidency is based on narrative, heavily based on narrative. Most presidencies are, but particularly this one. And so Powell basically ran out his course, and they needed to to do something. And so now they've picked Warsh, who's not the most dovish, or hasn't been. But if you think that these candidates got through Secretary Bessent and then the president, and they didn't sit down, and this is how the interview went, okay? This is, Brandon, this is how the interview went, right? Imagine you're the Fed chair, right? The candidate, right? You come into the room, right? And I'm gonna be the Treasury Secretary and the president in one, okay? And I'm gonna say, okay, cool. So you agree that we should be lowering rates and printing money, right? And then you say, no, I'm kind of this, that. No, wait. Why don't you come back next week? Let's reschedule this for next week. And then let's see what's happened to your opinion next week. So now you go home. You're like, what the fuck just happened? I just got kicked out, but they rescheduled it for next week. So then you come back next week. And we're like, so Brandon, like, you are dovish on printing money and lowering rates, right? And you're like, yes, sir. However, like, and then Bessent's like, Brandon, you're a fantastic person, Brandon. We're going to have to reschedule this for next week. So now next week, it's about 3 weeks later, and you're coming back like, what the fuck is going on here? And then they're like, so how do you feel about lowering interest rates and printing as much money as possible this year? And then you're like, I want to print as much money as possible, and I'm going to lower the rates as much as I can. You got the job. If you don't think that that's what happened, come on.
I mean, hey, I'm with you. I personally thought that, but it was just interesting how the market kind of reacted to it with, you know, the market essentially just tanking. And that's where I think, like, you know, everybody was looking to maybe his past opposed to just what he'd been saying, like, fairly recently, how he's even been coming at Powell and saying Powell moved too slowly. So, I mean, me personally, it made a lot of sense, you know, just kind of seeing this. Obviously, he wants to fight inflation, but I don't know. I guess it's one of those things where maybe the market and knew that everybody was anticipating a Fed chair that was going to cut a bunch of cut the interest rates. And so they got a guy who had a hint of hawkishness and, you know, so they dumped on the market and maybe that's the case. I'm not sure.
There is also buy the rumor, sell the news, right? So you've got that trade going on as well. So, you know, there's a lot of different facets to a market. And at this point, you know, he might also be a fall guy, right? Like Trump knows that, you know, at the end of the day, these guys are going to try and put as much friction as possible in his way. So why not announce a fall guy, make everyone attack him, you know, while you prepare behind the scenes the real candidate that can emerge by the time you get to confirmation. I don't know. Like, maybe that's what's going on. All I do know is that these guys are really good at maintaining volatility, right? Trump and Bessent have been fantastic at maintaining volatility. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens here. But Warsh certainly he certainly wasn't my first pick if I was doing it. So there must be something going on.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that. But I think, you know, with the volatility, I think something that Trump just intuitively knows is that, you know, people look at the markets to determine how the economy is doing. And obviously we've got Bitcoin down crashing. We're actually, while we're on this call right now, it's crashed below 70,000 British. So we might be done. Are we packing it up and going home, or what's the
deal?
Cooked.
With
the, yeah. We're cooked. Is it over?
It's over, bro. It was over last year, really. Like, we should have just known it was over last year. Nobody's searching for Bitcoin. Retail doesn't give a fuck. Retail is out here trading meme coins. Retail is out here trading gold and silver. Retail is out here trading, you know, AI stocks. Retail doesn't care. The people that, you know, you have recorded and put so much effort and heart and emotion into recording this podcast for don't give a fuck. Same thing with me. Not, they don't care about my videos. They don't care about my message. They just want to get rich tomorrow. And that's it, because that's all the hope they have. That's the world that we live in, Brandon.
Hey, trust me, man. I see it. It's interesting because, I mean, even walking around, and they're always like, all right, what's the next Bitcoin? I can't get to one full Bitcoin. You know, that's obviously been your message for quite some time. But, you know, with this and the amount of buying pressure that we're now having, you brought up MSTR. I want to dive into that. let's dive into some of the mechanisms that Saylor's using here, because I think it is really interesting, all the different products that he's starting to roll out. And in this bear market, his ability to raise a bunch of money, you know, seemingly every single week. And I think he had his third biggest buy ever, maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago now at this point. So, you know, how does he keep doing it when, and is there a potential that he's, now that he's like maybe underwater for his strike prices, are we going to start hearing the narrative that, you know, MSTR is going to go belly up again or what?
We hear this every 6 months. It's nothing new anymore. You know, the win for MSTR and Michael Saylor, what I pray on a daily basis happens for MSTR and Michael Saylor is that Michael Saylor no longer needs to show up to a single Bitcoin podcast or a single Bitcoin event. You know why? Because when that happens and the stock is going up, that means that institutions are in. Right? That's what I'm looking for. There's a reason why Michael Saylor was putting in all the effort, talking to sovereign wealth funds, talking to all the banks, talking to everyone. And, you know, the reason is very simple. It is, that's where the capital is. Retail doesn't have the capital anymore. Retail has the opinions. They don't have the capital. They're poor. They don't get it. They want to gamble. And MSTR is not a gamble. It's a fixed income product. It's not a gamble. It's not going to go up, you know, 700% in 2 minutes. Like, that's not what it's designed for. It's designed as a fixed income product. And so, you know, you got to talk to different people from that perspective. And Saylor, why would you waste all this time talking to retail until, unless you were building a base of a message, right? And you built the base of the message now, and now it's time to evolve and get it in the hands of the institutional capital and the $140 trillion fixed income market.
Yeah, and he's also mentioned the $200 trillion credit market and the $300 trillion bond market too. So, I mean, obviously these aren't small numbers by any means. And he's been talking to a lot of the sovereign wealth funds and the big money managers. But, you know, with this, it seems like everything is so bullish for the outlook going forward. You know, what are you seeing in the market? Is it just like a general whale sell-off? Is it because retail is just too afraid? Why are we having such a giant
institutions are buying? Institutions are buying. Like, this is the one thing. I saw a tweet from Eric Balchunas from Bloomberg, and his analysis pointed to the fact that 6%, that was it, 6% of IBIT capital left. Think about it. 94% huddled through this whole thing. Right? That's massive, right? And people don't really understand how institutional retail, right? And you, retail, we buy shit and then want to tell everyone about it, right? Institutions don't do that. Institutions sit there, wait until the price comes to them, and then they acquire it, and then they move on to the next thing, because it's not a magical thing that they just did. You and I want to be right about Bitcoin. Institution realizes they're just gonna get, you know, a 25% CAGR, and they're doing better than anything that could have happened. So institutions buy differently. They signal differently. They don't have opinions. They have signal. They have absorption. We are dealing with a market that where Bitcoin is being absorbed. It's not being chased. And that's what's different to the average retail Bitcoiner who's sitting there going, there's no interest. It's like, listen, motherfucker. Every time Bitcoin goes down a little bit, it's being bought up. What are you talking about? You know? And so, yeah, like, you see moments like this where buy orders lift off, and then you got massive crashes coming in the market. It's always going to happen. There's always going to be games being played in the market from big players. But the fact that we're not sitting at 50,000 by now, silver just went down 41% in a day. Silver. Not fart coin. Silver just went down 41% in a day, and it's taken Bitcoin 5 months to do that. Think about it. Like, this has become a different asset now. It's a different animal. And retail doesn't understand this. And then you go on X, and X is filled with a combination of morons and bots. So now if you can't even rely on X to give you any information. Right? So what do? You sell your Bitcoin and you go and trade meme stocks, or you go buy gold and silver, or you go buy Bitcoin treasury companies, or you, because you don't have the brain capacity it takes, like an institution does, to just buy and hold forever. That's the secret. That's always been the secret. There's never another secret. You buy the scarce thing and you hold it forever. And if the administration was turning around and saying, you know what, we've kind of changed our opinion on Bitcoin, I would understand people shitting themselves. But what did they do just yesterday? The vice president and the treasury secretary both went out and said, Bitcoin is a very important asset. We want everyone to know that Bitcoin is super important. Why would they do that?
Because they want to bring confidence back in the market, I would say.
100%.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely. But retail doesn't see that because retail looks at price. And they look at price thinking that they are going to see signal. But price is the weakest way to see signal. Institutions don't see signal in price. Price is the last effect. After you've taken all the actions and you made all the decisions, price then happens. That's how institutions see things.
What if I told you never had to sell your Bitcoin? Instead, you can borrow against it with Salt Lending. Why give up your hard-earned Bitcoin when you can unlock its value without letting it go? With Salt, you get secure Bitcoin collateralized loans with no credit checks, no prepayment fees, and best of all, no rehypothecation. Salt has had zero customer collateral losses since it launched. Salt was the first platform to offer Bitcoin collateralized loans starting way back in 2016. Today, they offer tailored options for both individuals and businesses. And now introducing Salt Shield, the no liquidation solution. No forced liquidations during the lifetime of your loan when you're enrolled with Salt Shield. This just launched at the Bitcoin conference in Las Vegas, and it is next level peace of mind. For Green Candle listeners only, head to saltlending.com/green-candle for this exclusive offer for your Bitcoin collateralized loan. You can get cash for your Bitcoin today. Salt Lending, secure, trusted, proven.
Retail looks at price first and says, the price went up, so this is going to happen. But they miss it because the price went up because all of these things happened. That's the difference.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was actually doing some digging last time. We had the dip below 100,000. And it was like, you know, the institutions, the number of institutions with 1,000 Bitcoin was literally parabolic when we went down. And the number of wallets with like 0.1 Bitcoin or more went down. So that means, yep, you know, obviously that all the retail with just, you know, 10 million sats was essentially just selling off. And so it's
good.
Exactly like you're saying.
Hey,
yeah.
Good. Good. Fuck them.
I mean, that's crazy.
They keep doing the same thing over and over again. They keep doing the same shit over and over again. At some point, you just got to say, stay poor. They keep doing the same shit over and over again. And by the way, Bitcoin's the only asset where they've actually equalized in history. You didn't equalize with real estate. You didn't equalize with gold. Still to this day, if you want to buy a 1 gram bar of gold, because that's all you can afford, you're now paying 30% premiums for that 1 gram bar of gold, right? Over the price that I would buy if I'm buying a brick. And you want to fuck that asset by selling it? Go for it. Sell it. In fact, short it.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting a little crazy out there, though. I mean, when you...
Not really at all. It's not getting crazy. This is a repeating pattern. I am a pattern recognizer that sometimes has delusional hope. That's who I am. I am a pattern recognizer, and I realize this in real estate, and I realize it again in equities, and I realize it again in gold and silver, and for some fucking reason... I have delusional hope, and I'm having to relearn this again in Bitcoin.
Why do you think that is?
Because people are idiots. Brandon, they're idiots. They don't want to be rich, Brandon. They want the journey of getting rich. They don't want to be rich. They don't want to be fabulously wealthy, Brandon. They don't want it. All they want is to look like they're doing it. That's it. They want to look like they're actually progressing, but they don't want to actually progress because they would lose all of their friends. They would lose all of their family. they would lose everything if they actually made it. If they held the Bitcoin and Bitcoin goes to $10 million a coin, they are fucked. Their reality of who they are, a peasant, is fucked. And most people don't like breaking their reality of who they are.
So is it just a mental barrier then when we see this market volatility then? I mean, we had the HODL meme. I mean, that's your name, man. We got the British HODLs, we got the American HODLs, and it's just nobody listens to the meme. I mean, it's the oldest meme in Bitcoin.
Nobody cares. You know what's so funny is so many studies have been done on wealth, right? And then they redistribute the wealth in these studies. And then it basically ends up exactly the same number of people with wealth, new as it was before. And it's like, when do we admit that that's the human condition?
Well, it's funny you say that because I've done a couple videos on this because like I the wealth distribution in Bitcoin is very similar. You know, if you look at the wallet concentration, it's very similar to just wealth distribution in the fiat world. But the narrative around Bitcoin is that it's, you know, the people's money and that everybody's going to be, you know, buying. It's going to be the peasant's way to get rich and everything like that. But, you know, it's just human behavior just continuing to play out.
Absolutely. Nothing's ever going to change, Brandon. It's the same shit over and over again. It's new faces, new ideas, but it's the same percentages.
Yeah. So, all right. So then how do we fix this problem? Or
We don't fix the problem, Brandon. We don't fix the problem, Brandon. We don't. There's no fixing the problem. There is no fixing the problem. The people that are going to listen have already listened. That's it. You have to come to terms with the fact that the success rate on your videos in terms of people actually buying Bitcoin and holding it is going to be like 0.5%. That's it. Like, and you know, look, I think Bitcoiners kind of understand this. That's why a lot of young Bitcoiners spend their time talking to fucking, you know, empanada stand people trying to teach them how to accept Bitcoin. Because why would you bother talking to people with money? Because you know that on some level, you know that they're going to fuck up. So you kind of have this hope and this pull that if you teach the person that's, you know, making empanadas in South America how to accept Bitcoin, you're actually doing something for the world. Except they fucking sell the Bitcoin and convert it to US dollars because they've got to pay bills. It's a circle jerk, Brandon. It's all it is. And then a small percentage of people that listen to you, listen to me, will be a part of it because they'll actually HODL. And here's the craziest part. Out of that 0.5%, let's say, the majority of them will have already been rich because they understand mindset. That's it. You know, I'm in a WhatsApp group in Dubai of Bitcoiners, right? And I don't really talk in it because it's a waste of time. So I'm just watching some of these messages because it's like, what's the point? Who am I talking to here? So anyway, I saw a message go by and the message said, this is from like a prominent Bitcoiner. And the message said, guys, does anyone know how I can, you know, on the rails that are needed to provide evidence or whatever, where I can convert some Bitcoin into cash because or buy a house with Bitcoin? And someone, this prominent Bitcoiner was asking that. And someone said, why do you want to do that? Doesn't make any fucking sense. And they said, I'm kind of sick and tired of this volatility. And that's the most honest thing ever. Right?
Yeah.
But that's how fucking legends are made.
It's true.
Handle the volatility. That's how the legends are made. Bitcoin has 10 days a year where it has its price action. That's it. 10 days a year. And everyone sits around on X and everyone sits around on YouTube for the other 350 days going, what the fuck is going on? And after you've been in that for 6 years, it wears you down. It wears you. Why do you think the gentlemen of old that actually built the wealth and that actually have built legacies, legendary wealth status, used to just smoke cigars. And like Andrew Carnegie used to just fuck off after he built his business. He was running his business through people. He just used to go do shit, just do art stuff, just random stuff, because you can't be in it, right? It's one of the things that I've been contemplating myself as well, because I've devoted, you know, I've been holding Bitcoin now since 2020, right? 6 years, right? And I've devoted, so I started when 2021 became British HODL. So yeah, like 5 years-ish to being British HODL. And it's like, what's the fucking point?
Last bull run, we had exchanges blow up. You saw FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. But the true power of Bitcoin is getting it off an exchange into cold storage. This bull run, I'm trusting Trezor, the company that's been around for over a decade, and they just had a brand new release of the best hardware wallet in the game, the Trezor Safe 7. It's got the first audible secure element. No other hardware wallet has this. On top of it, I travel a lot, so I need an easy way to connect my Bitcoin hardware wallet to my laptop, phone, what have you. Therefore, it is the easiest way and has the best connectivity to access your Bitcoin. This is truly how you become your own bank, and the best way to do that is with a Trezor Safe 7. So you could go to the affiliate link down below and get yourself one right now, and do it quickly because they are flying off the shelves, folks. So do it with the easiest and best way to get your Bitcoin off exchanges. So go to the affiliate link down below, get yourself a Trezor Safe 7, and get your Bitcoin off exchanges in the easiest way possible. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
It was great. The people that listened to me. It was fantastic. But at this point, my portfolio is set. The conviction is higher than ever. Larry Fink now works for us, right? Because we own the asset. He owns the asset. He's promoting the asset. BlackRock's doing better marketing than I am at this point. At one point, British HODL was doing better marketing than BlackRock. And now BlackRock is doing better marketing than British HODL. Fantastic. That's exactly what needs to happen. So I've been asking myself, like, what's next for me? What do I want to learn about? What's actually interesting? Because Bitcoin's no longer interesting. That's how you know it's about to win, because it's no longer interesting.
You said about to win. Do you think Bitcoin has already won because of just where it is?
I think the game's already won. This game is cooked. People have no idea. Why do you think they're losing their fucking minds? Because they have no idea how much you've already won. You got the C-suite of Wall Street pumping Bitcoin. You got the C-suite of the US government all pumping Bitcoin. The price goes down. The vice president and the secretary, the treasury secretary come out and defend Bitcoin. What are we talking about? You guys are fucking worried about the price? That's retail moronic behavior. Like everyone that was a Bitcoin long-term holder is now making comments as if they wanted to trade it. I thought you were a fucking long-term holder. You know? So what are we talking about here? Are we traders? Are we long-term hodlers? What are we? I know what I am. I live in a jurisdiction, because I'm not a moron, where I pay 0% taxes, right? 0% taxes. I could sell my Bitcoin at any point right now and pay 0% tax on the gain from about 5,000 to where it is now. 0%. Guess how much I fucking sold? Zero. Because I'm a hodler, right? It's done.
It's in the name.
It's set. It's in the name, right? Like, it's done. It's said. So when all these idiots are living in like 40% tax jurisdictions, going like, oh, it's the cycle over because I need to sell. Like, maybe I'll sell. Maybe I'll buy it when it goes. Maybe I'll, because they missed the top, right? Because, of course, none of these idiots get the top. So they missed the top. And then they're like, I'm going to sell at 95,000. I'm going to sell the next time it gets to 85,000, I'm going to sell. Then it goes down even more. The next time it gets to 80,000, I'm going to sell. And then eventually it will go to 75,000 from 70. They'll sell. And then it will go straight to 120. And it'll be fucking beautiful. They'll be out. And there'll be just another story on the side of the fucking street talking about how they held this Bitcoin and they made all this money. From 10,000 to 75,000, and they'll tell their grandchildren about it, and they'll say, oh, we bought this house because of Bitcoin. And their grandchildren will say, why the fuck didn't you hold it? Because this house is 50% cheaper than it was that day if you just held the Bitcoin. And they'll say, no, it was the right time to do it. It was the right fucking time to do it. Shut the fuck up and get away from me.
I mean, I love it, man. It's always, it always gets me so bullish talking to you. And, you know, I mean, we touched on silver, just how much this asset moved. I was looking it up here before while you were describing all this, because the silver market cap now is at a little over 4.2 or a little under $4.2 trillion. And we had a $4.2 trillion asset move, what, 40% in a day? I mean, what's to say that this Bitcoin market that's now at like $1.4 trillion, give or take, right now, just sitting right around $70,000. What's to say that this can't go, you know, 50, 60% in a day and have that kind of short squeeze movement that and go parabolic?
Silver tripled. Silver tripled. So if silver can triple, I got Bitcoin is telling me Bitcoin can't triple anymore in a hurry.
Well, that's the power law.
These people are idiots. These people are idiots. They're doom and gloom boomers, and they're idiots. They have a new thing. Now it's the Epstein thing. So I called this shit. So as soon as I heard that going around, I was like, I got to make a video on this real quick. So I put it out there, and suddenly everyone's talking about Epstein ruining the markets, the Epstein files. Oh, everything's going to collapse. Why is everything always going to collapse to these fucking people? Like, imagine living in that mind state. Imagine living in that mind state where everything is always just going to fucking collapse. You know, like, I find this energy just... I'm allergic to this energy. I'm allergic to this way of thinking. Like, I don't think like that. You know what we're going to get right now? We are going to get the biggest fucking bull run that you've ever even thought of as soon as this liquidity starts. Because the whole market, the whole of the entire world's governments are now on notice that the US is pro-Bitcoin. Everyone's got permission. Everyone's been educated. BlackRock is flying around the world educating people on Bitcoin. That's what happened in 2025. So when the liquidity starts pumping again, the capital is going to get to Bitcoin a lot easier than it would have.
Do you think that capital and like the liquidity starts to unlock around like midterm elections too, so Trump can try to get you know, the Republicans to stay in the House?
No, it's happening now. The 1st of January, they changed the leverage ratios for bank deposits. They're trying to take that back to before 2008. By the 1st of April, it's optional right now. By the 1st of April, it's mandatory. And what that means is, and they're probably going to make it even better, right? They're probably going to reduce the amount of leverage. They're going to probably reduce the impact on the balance sheet even more. And they're going to shove $10 trillion of debt refi down the bank's throats, onto the bank's balance sheets, and they're gonna get the banks to lend that out. And as the rates come down, they're gonna lend it out even more. And this is gonna be, Bessent has already said this, we want Wall Street and Main Street to do well. What that basically means is, we're gonna lend, baby, lend. That's what's gonna happen. And what do you need for that? You need absolute liquidity, and you need low rates. And you're about to get both scenarios. So when I hear Bitcoiners shitting themselves, it's like, come on, guys. Like, are we hodlers? Like, what are we doing here? Like, just do what you want to do. Why are you asking me? What the fuck is the point of speaking to me at that point? You know, it's just the truth. It's like I'm actually annoyed. There's so much more interesting things going on.
Yeah,
the game is won. BlackRock entered the game. I knew it from the beginning. My entire thesis was at some point there's going to be an ETF. And that ETF came, and the charge was led by BlackRock. BlackRock then created the highest performing in terms of AUM fund in their history. You think they just did that to get the whole thing to fall apart in a year? fuck are we talking about? We're literally talking to literal morons. Like that's literally what's going on here. Like these people are thick. Like, I don't even know what to say anymore. Like, it's like, how much more do you need to say to go buy Bitcoin, shut the fuck up, you get fabulously wealthy? Just because you didn't get fabulously wealthy in the year that you wanted to get fabulously wealthy in, like, maybe just chill out for a second. But I think all that extra liquidity is going to start flowing in between now and the end of Q2. And I think you should see Bitcoin react to that.
All right, I like that. What did you make of like Larry Fink and all the speeches that just happened at the World Economic Forum? Because I thought
it was amazing.
It was something that was interesting. He said that that basically, in short, like the elites have lost control, or like the narrative is shifting where people don't like the elites. So it seems like he's being self-aware with all of this. What did you make of Fink and kind of his, I guess, addressing of Davos? This bull run, I'm looking for ways to stack Bitcoin in my sleep, and mining has always caught my eye. I've partnered with the guys over at Simple Mining to help you do just that. I don't recommend anything that I don't use personally, so I've got a machine up and running with them right this second. And they've even opened the facility up so anyone can go and visit. They manage over 15,000 machines for 500 clients, handling all of the maintenance and repairs so you don't have to. And for the Green Candle listeners, they're giving an exclusive offer: all the repairs for the first year for free. So if you've been thinking about mining, head on over to simplemining.io/greencandle to get this exclusive offer and learn about the potential tax benefits that you can get from mining with Simple Mining. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
Larry Fink has impressed me so much. The more I watch him talk, the more I pay attention to what BlackRock's doing, the more I listen, the more impressed I get, because he's clearly someone who didn't understand Bitcoin, stopped and said, maybe I've got something wrong here, went and learned, studied, understood narrative, understood what the purpose of the asset was, and then allowed his team, allowed Robert, allowed all these people to go and execute in the way that only BlackRock can do. And now they've basically defended the whole industry here. A combination of BlackRock and Michael Saylor, what they're doing is unbelievable, right? These are the two people that basically work for us, right? You got Larry Fink and the army of BlackRock, and you got Michael Saylor and the absolute behemoth of MSTR working for us at this point. So the more coins that get sold and get absorbed by Larry Fink and Michael Saylor, the better it is. And I put a tweet out, because all these doom and gloom boomers, these dancing grandpas, that's what I call them. These dancing grandpas, they got to dance. Grandpa's got to dance too. You know, they were talking about Epstein ruining everything. I said, hey guys, you know who wasn't on the Epstein files? Larry Fink. Buy IBIT. They lost their shit. They absolutely lost their shit at me. It was hilarious.
Well, I mean, it is kind of interesting that, yeah, obviously he wasn't on there. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if you've gotten this, but I got some guys that, you know, just are kind of in normie world that I've convinced to buy Bitcoin. Like, you know, when it was hitting 100K, I told them, you know, what is it, 2 summers ago, maybe, when it was 60K. And I was like, hey, buy Bitcoin, it's going to hit 100K. They didn't do it. And then it hit 100K. Now they're texting me like, dude, why is Epstein tanking the market from the grave?
See what I mean? I knew it. Yeah. Like, this is just going to be the narrative now. It's going to be Epstein. Then it's going to be something else. You can't help these people, Brandon. They're beyond it. They deserve the underclass, the permanent underclass, the permie that's coming to them. They deserve it. And every single day they make decisions to further deserve it. And there's me and you now that are trying to help them. We're trying to say, here's my hand. Take my hand. Let me lift you out of the permanent underclass. And you know what they do? They like try and reach for the hand, and they touch the tops of our fingertips. And then they're like, no, I don't want that. You know why? Because the Matrix is good to me. the system is good to me. And then they fight to defend the fucking system. Good.
I mean, at this point, it just seems like, yeah, there is no changing all of that. But I want to get back to MSTR and the treasury companies too, because it seems like the narrative around the treasury companies has just been like completely bearish on everything, even MSTR. So, how are you viewing, these treasury companies and how they're playing out, especially with, kind of the volatility we saw in 2025?
What did you think of Saylor and Danny's chat? I'm curious.
I honestly, I see where Danny was coming from, because obviously, it's Bitcoin Twitter, right? They're essentially asking the same question, but I agree with Saylor at the end of the day. If you're a company, you should be holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and we shouldn't be attacking these companies for holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet, because it's better than not. I mean, holding a hard asset. And, at the end of the day, you should try to compare, a company that makes refrigerators with a company that makes refrigerators, opposed to comparing that company to Strategy, who's been in Bitcoin for 5 or 6 years. I mean, what do you want them to do? Compare all these companies to Strategy, who's been buying Bitcoin since 2020 and has like 700,000. Obviously, there's not going to be any companies that are going to be able to catch Saylor and Strategy at this point, but it's better than, not holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And it just seems like everybody's punishing these treasury companies because they're buying Bitcoin when we're all on the same team. And it's just cannibalism, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm glad you have that perspective, because I agree with you. I texted Danny and I thought, I told him he did a fantastic job. I also think Saylor did a fantastic job as well. I like that there's violence. I like it. I like the I like the aggression that Saylor had, right? Because it's the truth. Every company should be a Bitcoin company. These companies have obviously created their business model to be Bitcoin companies, and it's up to you to decide whether that's valuable to your portfolio or not. Me personally, as I've said multiple times now, I got caught up in the treasury company drama over last summer, and I was very honest by saying I'm allocating less than 0.5% of my net worth into a various amount of these things, because I think Strategy is just completely different to all of these things, right? And I realized that was me succumbing, because I'm not a perfect human, even though I act like a perfect human. I'm not a perfect human. So I gave in to my activity bias, Brandon, and I put 0.5%, which is now probably sitting at 0.1%, right?
Yeah.
And what's crazy about it is I got most of my net worth in Bitcoin and MSTR, and I was spending most of my time thinking about the 0.5%. And then I have to look myself deep in my own eyes in the mirror and ask myself why I'm being so retarded.
Yeah,
and then I realized, this is dumb. So forget about them. As sell orders on all of them. And whenever they hit those sell orders, they'll sell out, and I'll roll it back into MSTR at that point. But look, every company should hold Bitcoin, right? If you enter a trade like you were born to do as a retail normie, you were born to do this. You were born as a retail normie, Brandon. They were born to do exactly what they did. Right? They were born to buy Bitcoin, the safest asset humanity has ever seen, with absolute finality of scarcity. They were born to buy that, right? Feel really good about it, and then sell it, right? That's exactly what they were born to do. So they're living up to their purpose. So they bought that Bitcoin, they held that Bitcoin, and then they decided to sell it because they joined an X community full of bots. And bots can be like computer bots or human bots, right? We call them NPCs.
Yeah.
And then they sold that Bitcoin and bought a treasury company for a 7x MNAV. So they made a bad trade, right? And now their portfolio is down. So now it's Saylor's fault, or it's Andrew's fault, or it's Simon's fault, or it's Dylan's fault, or it's someone else's fault. This is what they're built to do, Brandon. And then my heroes, though, out of all of them, my heroes are the ones who bought, you know, who took a Bitcoin, sold it, bought a treasury company at a 7x MNAV, right?
One of my absolute favorite things about Bitcoin is meeting all of you in person. So mark your calendars for February 28th and come down to where I've called home for the past 8 years, Tampa, Florida. The Bitcoin Bay Foundation is putting on the Sound Money Soiree. It's the third annual. It's a night of Bitcoin, poker, an open bar, and a silent auction. All support will go to Bitcoin Bay, a nonprofit that is creating a circular economy down in Tampa Bay, Florida. They're doing absolutely great things, and it's the Bitcoin community that I've called home for such a long time, and these guys are absolutely crushing it. So please do anything you can to support. Buy your tickets today. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE to get 10% off your Sound Money Soiree tickets.
So do you know anything about Bitcoin?
No.
You guys can come down and see this ugly mug. Come boogie on the dance floor, shake it, and now that Bitcoin's over 100K, you can do it all with your girlfriends. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
And then it crashed 80%. And Brandon, you know what they did? Brandon, listen to me. These are my fucking heroes, Brandon. They sold that shit 80% down and they bought silver at $80. These are my fucking heroes, Brandon. I don't know what to say. Like, just stay where you are forever. When are you going to learn?
I mean, it's like what you said, though. It's like everybody has that bias. Like, oh, I need to meddle with this. You know, I need to get my fingers wet and just, you know, type on the keyboard in this trade order and start moving money. And in reality, just the simplest thing is just to hodl. But I mean, I agree with you, too. At the end of the day, you know, in that Danny interview, Saylor was just basically, I mean, he didn't outwardly say this, but he was just essentially like, what I was getting from him was like, all right, you bought a company at like 7 or 8x MNAV. That was a bad investment. Like, what do you like? Just take ownership in that at a certain
just point. Sit on it.
Yeah.
Just sit on it. Like when I, you know, my MSTR journey was interesting, but when I pivoted a lot back into MSTR, it was at a 2x MNAV. So I just decided, okay, well, I need to wait until they've accumulated twice the amount of Bitcoin and the price has doubled from this point.
Yeah.
That's it. Just fucking sit there until that happens. So that's the issue with these people. But the masterstroke, I didn't expect that there was going to be the treasury company PSYOP and the fucking gold and silver PSYOP. The gold and silver PSYOP was perfect. Like if I was like a super ruling elite, and I could move Bitcoin markets. The gold and silver PSYOP is amazing. Think about it, right? Because it fits the exact narrative of Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is actually better than gold and silver. So when you suddenly go, no, the asset that you thought was now shit is now performing, sell your fucking Bitcoin to me, people do it. You put them straight into their amygdala and they take the action that you want them to take, like the pheasants that they are.
I mean, at this point,
you don't even know what to say now, Brandon.
I'm lost for words, man, because I mean, it is true.
It's the
truth. Essentially saw that. I mean, we saw it all play out too. And the crazy thing is a lot of people came to Bitcoin kind of from that gold silver bug, you know,
exactly.
Mindset, right?
That's why
the hard assets. And then
it's
now they're, I mean, it just made them all question it. Essentially, right?
Yes. Like, that's all you want to do, though.
Peter Schiff finally got his day. Peter Schiff finally got his day.
I had dinner with Peter Schiff here in Dubai, like a few days before, like you know when all the conferences were going on here in Dubai.
Yeah.
And he was like super excited about gold and it going up and whatever. And I told him, like, Peter, I sold all of my gold. Because we know similar people because I was in the gold space. I was like, I sold all of my gold in 2020. He goes, whoa, you missed out on a 2X. I was like, yeah, Peter, I cry myself to sleep every fucking night because I bought Bitcoin at 5K. Like, you're an idiot, you know? So, yeah, like, the Bitcoin, attacking Bitcoin with gold and silver was such a, like, I wish that there is actually this overlord in the markets that did this, that orchestrated this whole thing. Because I warned everyone, they're going to come at you with every tool in the box to shake your confidence, to lower your dopamine, and you're going to fucking sell. And guess what everyone did? Sold. How come I don't get no credit for predicting that they were going to sell? I've been saying this on videos for over 2 years now. I told them, like, as soon as the ETFs come out, every weapon in the arsenal is going to come for your Bitcoin. Right? So they found your degenerate side and got it out with your Bitcoin treasury companies. And just to add insult to injury and make you lose absolute, complete faith, gold and silver started fucking rallying.
Is it because they try to financialize Bitcoin in a sense?
No, because they just don't want these peasants with Bitcoin. Would you? So I don't.
I mean, hey, man, everybody gets Bitcoin at the price they deserve, right?
And No, Brandon. Everybody sells Bitcoin at the price that they deserve. That's the truth. That's the fucking truth.
I mean, we're seeing it play out like never before right now. Like, so,
it's happened every fucking time, Brandon. It's happened every time. 2008 was the best time after that period to buy property. What did retail do? Fucking dump their property straight into the hands of Blackstone. Mm-hmm. To the point where the government is now coming out. Your government is coming out now and saying, we're going to put a ban on this because they own too much.
Yeah.
This happens every time. They're so predictable, Brandon. They're so predictable. You just have to lose the empathy.
Well, give us some hope for here. Give us some hope for the future, British.
What do you mean? Everyone who's holding Bitcoin who heard the message. I told you there's going to be 0.5% of people that hear the message. There's going to be 0.5% of people that understand what we're saying. There's going to be 0.5% of people that completely get it. There's going to be 0.5% of people that understand that it's a monetary network with absolute scarcity, which means that the percentage of the network that you hold is what's important. Not using it. Not buying fucking empanadas with it, not buying coffees with it. How much of it you hold is what's important. There's going to be a percentage, and I think that's around 0.5% of the Bitcoin audience, right? And those people are going to make it, and their kids are going to be happy, right? And their grandchildren are going to look them in the eyes and go, you did the right thing. Thank fuck you did that. Because no matter what I do now, I can't do it. Bitcoin's the only asset where if I fuck up, everyone in my bloodline pays for it, right? My dad was in real estate, yeah? And he learned his skills of real estate and whatever he was doing. And if London had just run away from me, I could take those skills, learn those lessons, bring them to Dubai, like a lot of people did. A lot of people brought their property skills to Dubai and have made fortunes with it, right? Can't do that with Bitcoin. You're fucked forever. It's the forever fucked. The forever underclass.
Well, it is the golden opportunity. I mean, we did have Bitcoin at 120,000, but now it's, 70,000, and it's your time to get to one Bitcoin.
No, they want to wait until it hits 58. Haven't you heard?
Is that we're going to keep on buying the dips. We're going to just wait till it keeps going lower, right?
Keeps going down, yeah. And then when it actually reverses, that's when I'll buy.
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody can time the market. You know, I mean, 100%. You get it. You get it, British. We're all traders here. It's not the huddle, right? It's the trading.
I know. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. In fact, you know what I want to happen, Brandon? I want there to be a 50% tax on your Bitcoin profits. This is the other side, right? I want a 50% tax on your Bitcoin profits, and I want absolutely opened Bitcoin lending markets. Because do you know how many thick people that I see on like X that are talking about the fact that are celebrating the fact that a state in America or a country in Europe is allowing people to pay their taxes with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
They're retarded, Brandon. They're retarded. There's no hope for them. There's no hope for them. They're going to take your fucking Bitcoin and you're celebrating the fact that there's another way for you to give it away. I want a 50% tax on Bitcoin and I want absolutely open lending markets. That's what I want.
There we go. I mean, hey, it might be coming in certain jurisdictions, especially where you're from, man. I wouldn't doubt it if we see like Britain and the UK.
No, here you see people. The UK. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Which would be great for the UK, by the way. They should make it absolutely easy for you to acquire Bitcoin. Then they should put a 70% tax on selling your Bitcoin. And then they should absolutely say, if you want to lend against your Bitcoin, we'll give you a discounted rate. That's what actually should happen.
Yeah,
that's what should happen. And that would strengthen UK capital markets, and it would strengthen the purchase of Bitcoin amongst the elite, and it would strengthen the United Kingdom. But they don't want to do that. It's like in Dubai, right? In Dubai, there's no taxes. So a lot of people feel more comfortable spending their Bitcoin because there's no taxes.
Yeah,
right. You really got to have an iron will to sit here and go, fuck you. I'm not selling. I'm not spending my Bitcoin.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So we need a 50% worldwide tax on Bitcoin and absolutely open lending markets. That's what we need.
Well, who knows? It might be coming soon. But British, you've always been very generous with your time, and you get me fired up, man. Either way, hopefully we get through to that 0.5% this time. So why don't you tell people where they can find you and what else you got going on, man?
Don't even bother.
Don't even bother. All right. Well, don't follow British HODL. Don't go watch any of his videos.
I put five long years into this now, Brandon. Let's keep the retards away from me, Brandon, please.
All right. I'll try to not send it your way, but thanks so much for coming on, big man.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you guys all for tuning in to another great episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you found some value in this one, please hit that subscribe button and that like button to help send this one to the masses. And I've got a surprise for you guys. I've got two more episodes that you have the chance to watch here. So go ahead and click one of them, and I'll see you guys all at the next one.